118-99 in game six is mine. That is what the Sacramento Kings said last night to the Golden State Warriors. I really wish that there was a way to take a poll of, like, an honest poll of what Sacramento Kings fans thought was going to happen last night. Because I don't think many of us would have predicted that the Kings would absolutely dominate game six and send it back to Sacramento for game seven. But damn it, that's what happened. And wow, I mean, I'm still reeling from last night, Sam. That was, that win was not only just awesome, but that was a statement win. I mean, they went in there and they controlled that game from start to finish.
Yeah, I think it was the perfect medicine to whatever illness was plaguing them, that had them losing three straight games, losing a game at home. This was by far the most convincing win that the Kings have had in this series, and maybe the most convincing win that either team has had in this series, because I think it really some things of maybe some rest and the age of the Golden State Warriors. And we've been saying it all series, Jason, I know you've been preaching it. When are we going to see the Kings look like the team in the regular season? I think that was last night.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've said it throughout this series, the Kings have not played their A plus game. They just hadn't yet, from an offensive standpoint. And, I mean, it's not like everybody on the team went crazy. I mean, Harrison only had six, Sabonis had seven. But you had sort of the regulars put up double digits. You had Herter, he had 12, but he had a late 12. So his 12 was a little bit more impactful. Keegan Murray had 15 points, but and that it's not like he had 23 like the other night, but he was out there getting a ton of rebounds. He actually led the team in rebounds with 12. De'Aaron had 26. Malik had 28. Trey Lyles came in and gave you 12 off the bench. Terrence Davis came in and gave you 7. Davion had 5. And look, I have been asking for Kessler Edwards throughout the game. I mean, throughout the series, because to me, it always just seemed like the Kings were missing. I'm missing a guy who could come in and do all of the little things. That was exactly what I had been asking for. And Mike Brown listened to me a little bit, but he pulled a different player. He pulled Terrence Davis instead. And that was the exact right thread to pull, because Terrence Davis came in and played so well for the Kings. He had 7 points, 2 assists, 2 rebounds. I know he fouled out, but I actually felt like some of his fouls were pretty cheap. Like, there were a few that easily could have been no calls. But he came in, gave you energy, played great defense, and it was the exact right thread to pull.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Mike Brown did. I think he outcoached Steve Kerr in this game. Yeah. I think we finally saw Mike Brown was pretty adverse to making really a change the first 5 games. And this game 6 was, I think, the biggest demonstration of his impact. And he really gave a lot of props to the other coaches on the staff of they were suggesting this smaller lineup, playing Trey a little more, different things like that, playing TD, Terrence Davis, a little bit more. And I think that willingness to take that leap in a do or die situation, really, if they lose that game, the season's done. Yeah. Right. So they had everything and go out and put out their best performance. We talked about it last night a little bit, Jason. I just like seeing this team. I know we can sit here. They have played way better defense than they did in the regular season.
Oh, yeah.
In this series against the best offense they are going to face if they were to go all the way to the finals.
Yeah. And I'll keep going.
I think this Warriors team, because the Kings have the best offense, the Warriors have the second best offense, and no other team has Steph and Clay and Wiggins who is hitting.
Yeah. And
right.
No, you're 100% right. You're 100% right.
And to me, it just the Kings are going to win this series by doing what they do best. And that was all year outscoring people. And they were trying to do something like playing defense, playing hard in defense. But on this, against this team, this Golden State Warriors team, I could be in Klay Thompson's pocket all night and he's still going to make shots. So at the end of the day, I need someone that's going to match him. And I like having TD out there, Herter out there, Keegan. And yes, granted, they need to make shots, which they were not doing early in the series. And that may have swayed sort of the rotation and that balance. But maybe there's some life now that they're hitting shots and those moves are paying dividends of, all right, this offense is now going to help their defense and put a lot of pressure on Golden State.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so there's obviously a lot to talk about. This is going to be a fairly short episode because we're going to try to get it out before – I mean, we're definitely going to get this out before Game 7. Let's talk about that small lineup real quick. I mean, for those of you listening who aren't necessarily basketball nerds and have been watching the Kings all year long, part of what made the Kings so effective on offense with Sabonis is, if you've been listening to the local broadcast, they've been talking about the DHO, which is just the delayed handoff between, you know, Sabonis and Fox, Sabonis, Herter, Monk, Murray. It doesn't matter. Sabonis runs it with, like, everybody. The reason why that's been so effective is because a lot of times teams will keep their center, whoever's guarding Sabonis, kind of near him. So what ends up happening is when they run somebody off Sabonis, he's got options to hand it off to whoever's running. Let's say it's Monk, because Monk and Sabonis probably are the duo that run it the best. So you have Sabonis who can hand it off to Monk, and then Sabonis can roll to the hoop, and because the center has been attached to Sabonis near the top of the key, what Monk has now is a clear lane either to go to the hoop or to dish it to Sabonis rolling if the center sort of steps out on Monk. The reason why they haven't been able to do that is because they've been keeping Looney in the paint. And just been, if you guys have watched the series, you'll notice that Sabonis will catch the ball up at the elbow and be totally by himself. And that's strictly a defensive thing from the Warriors' standpoint. They're not giving the Kings the opportunity to sort of run a version of a pick and roll going to the hoop. So they haven't really been able to do that. Well, by taking Sabonis out and bringing Trey Lyles in, what that forced Kevon Looney to do is step all the way out to the 3-point line, because you have to take into account the fact that Trey Lyles is a pretty decent 3-point shooter. Mm-hmm. So what that does is it opens up lanes for everybody else to drive or to, hell, even run pick and rolls. And it just created so many more options for the Kings, not only from the standpoint of they didn't have Kevon Looney sitting in the middle just, you know, blocking all these shots.
Yep.
But they ran this. But what it did was it gave them 5 shooters on the floor, mm-hmm. which stretches a defense, like, way, way, way out. Like, it only works – running 5 out only works if you have 5 shooters. And because the Kings have a big in Trey Lyles who can do that, not only do you pull Kevon Looney all the way out from the key, but you stretch everybody else out. And that just opens up a lot of driving kick opportunities. And, man, it worked so well for the Kings last night. Like, it was noticeable how much easier their shots looked. I mean, you'd think that maybe the defensive end is where they would get a little bit not even necessarily the defensive end. I'd say more offensive and defensive rebounding is when they would get hurt. But, man, the Kings were gang rebounding, and they ended up out-rebounding the Warriors by 11. The Kings had 53 rebounds. The Warriors had 42. The Kings mm-hmm. had 18 offensive rebounds. The Warriors had 11. And the Kings had 35 defensive rebounds to the Warriors' 31. So it didn't affect them. The way that you have to counter having a small lineup is gang rebounding. You have to send everybody at the ball. And they did that really well. So, I mean, man, that strategy worked so, so well. That was a great change by Mike Brown.
Yeah, and I think it all comes down to the players playing. Like you said, that small lineup can get kind of abused if Kevon Looney is getting an offensive rebound every single time down the court. And they just did a great job gang rebounding. I think really we can heap as much praise on Fox as we want. The dude is a superstar. He's going to be a superstar in this league. But his commitment to playing defense, first and foremost, I think has been widely talked about. And that's awesome to see. But his commitment to rebounding the basketball on the defensive end and finishing possessions, him, Monk is in there getting rebounds. Herder, I think this is a big understatement of his game. He's always willing to go in there to rebound. Keegan Murray grabbing a bunch of – it's a collective team effort, because outside of – we talk about that lineup, right? Outside of the matchup of Looney and Lyles, the Kings kind of have length everywhere else.
Yeah.
Right? If Draymond's in, then, okay, Draymond's got a little more length, kind of, than Keegan Murray. I think Keegan Murray might be taller. Wiggins obviously provides the Warriors a lot of length, but everywhere else, I mean, Herder's taller than Thompson. Yeah,
he's 6'7". Right?
Right? 6'7". Curry, Poole, if he's in. Like, those are matchups where the Kings can out-physical the Golden State Warriors on those 50-50 plays. And that's really the biggest thing, because in those three losses, Looney had too much of an impact on those games of his ability to rebound the basketball. And they just did a great job with limited amount of Sabonis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and can we talk about the person who played the most for the Kings last night? Do you know who led the Kings in minutes?
Keegan Murray.
Keegan Murray, by a mile! By a mile! Malik Monk played 32 minutes. That was the most from a bench player. De'Aaron played 37, but Keegan played 45 minutes. He played almost the entire game. He had 15 points, 12 rebounds, 2 assists. I know if you look at his field goal,
didn't shoot very well.
He didn't, he didn't shoot amazing, but he made
he was putting them up.
He put him, yeah, he was putting them up, and that was I honestly didn't think that any of the shots that he took last night were bad shots.
Yeah.
Like, they were all good rhythm shots, and you have to account for – like, he was hitting threes. Like, he made 5 field goals, but 4 of them were threes. And it felt like they all came at the right time.
A couple early
for
momentum, and then a couple late,
Yeah, and I feel like one of the stories of the first couple of games had been, like, the Kings were getting really good shots, and there were points where you were, like – where you – wanted one to fall, because it felt like if it did, momentum was going to flip. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember game one, like, the crowd just felt like there were a couple threes where we were ready to pop, and they just weren't falling. And this game, it felt like, I mean, yes, the Kings started to make their threes more, like, I would say in the latter part of the game, like, midway through the third, and then into the fourth quarter. But before that, they really weren't hitting, but they all felt like the ones that they did hit sort of came at the right time. And I felt like that was – because it's one thing to be hitting shots, but it's another thing to be hitting shots when you absolutely need them, and like to change momentum or to stop a run from the other team. And it felt like, yes, they weren't making a ton at the beginning, but they were to either keep their momentum – or stop the Warriors' momentum. They just came at the right time, and then by the time we got to the third and fourth quarter, they just started to fall. And that's what we were talking about throughout these past couple games, was they just weren't playing their A-plus game. And when they got to the second half, they started to, and it was like, okay, this is what these games should have looked like. I mean, Ben texted at halftime, and he asked us how we felt, and I sent a text back to you guys that said if they were hitting their shots, they'd be up by 20. And and they second half comes around, they hit their shots, they win by 20. Like, it's just one of those things where I really felt like the Kings have been the better team in this series. They just haven't played the best games, you know?
They
keep this rolling for one more game.
Yeah, they're just a year early. Man, they don't have that. I think the Golden State Warriors can fall back on, well, we've been here, done that many times, won championships, hit big shots in those championships. Like, this is nothing new for Curry, Clay, Draymond, Wiggins. Like, none of those guys are overwhelmed by this situation. I think this is all new territory for every single one of the big players on the Kings. I think some interesting things, right? There was a flip that I think switched in game five for a particular player that I think we need to give a little more credit to as probably the second most influential Kings player in getting them to a 3-3 tie in this series, and that's Malik Monk. Definitely has superseded Sabonis in the hierarchy of Kings influential players because Sabonis has gone missing.
I was gonna say at least for this series, yeah.
Yeah. Just for this playoffs series. It was the third quarter it might have been the second quarter in game five. Something just flipped in his head and he was attacking every single time down the court. And I think it's interesting, right? Malik Monk has the perception of what, a 3-point shooter, a sharpshooter, right? But he is third in the playoffs in free throw attempts.
Oh yeah, he attacks the hoop with just reckless abandon.
Yeah, and I think it's added a new dimension to his game because I don't think anywhere else he's really sort of had that element or been known as that sort of player. And it's really like he's following Fox's lead and being an extension of sort of Fox's game to where he's driving. He's 30th in the entire playoffs in 2-point attempts, but he's third in free throw percentage and third in free throw attempts, right? So getting him to the line is benefiting them a lot. Fox, he takes a lot of 2-pointers. He takes the second most 2-point attempts in the league, but he's 50% on 2-pointers. So he is ultra efficient when he gets downhill. So I think the biggest thing for them is to just continue to go downhill. It sucks. Either Sabonis, I don't get why no one's in Sabonis's ear and like, hey, dude, start taking those 12, 15-foot jump shots. They're not guarding you. Do it. I mean, you hit 37% from three, so why not take a couple threes just so they have to honor you out there, and then that opens it up a little bit more for everyone else. I don't get why it's taking six games for that to be the case.
Yeah, so they mentioned that on the local broadcast, and they had said that Mike Brown had taken, like, I don't want to say taking credit or taking responsibility, but he had said apparently before this game, hey, if they leave you wide open, like, just go ahead and take those shots. And one of the very first possessions of the game, he let one fly from the corner and knocked it down. It was a three. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow, this is amazing. I was like, I'm surprised. I was like, was it really? Because the broadcast made it sound so simple, like all that needed to be done was Mike Brown just telling him to shoot it. And I was like, I don't know if it really is that simple. But because my dad, honestly, because we talk almost after almost every game, and he kept pointing out to me, too. He was like, there's got to be something else that's going on there because, you know, my dad, he's never – you know, my dad never played basketball. He's just watched me my entire life and just watched basketball throughout his life. He was like, if I can see it, then there's got to be something more going on there because it's so blatantly obvious to me that, like, you'd want somebody who is confident taking that shot to take that shot. And I feel like Sabonis is that guy. But for whatever reason, yeah, he hasn't been. And you're right. I don't know what it has been. Like I said, the broadcast oversimplified it, it seemed. It seemed like they were just saying, yeah, well, all that needed to happen was Mike Brown just needed to go, yeah, just shoot. And it's like, well, I don't know if it's that. It's weird. But, I mean, he started to take a couple of those, which was really nice. But we really do need to talk about him. He only played 23 minutes. He had 7 points, 11 rebounds, 4 assists. I mean, he was kind of effective when he was in, but – and I felt like the thing for me last night, more so with him, was it felt like he was hunting for fouls instead of points. There was one play in particular, where, and I don't want to single out just one play as like the reason for my take on this, but it's just the one that sticks out in my mind. There was one where he got a rebound, and it looked like he had a clear path just to go up two. Like, he's such a strong dude. Just, like, he had a clear opportunity to go up with two hands and just get a put-back layup. And he goes up, and as he's going up, he just kind of flails at the, like, smallest amount of contact. And he misses, and there's no foul call. And I feel like through the first two games, he was getting those calls. But 3, 4, and 5, he just hasn't been getting those calls. And, man, he's got to – I think he's got to realize that because what made him so special, I think, throughout the year was – how physical and how strong of a player he was. And it never really felt like he was searching for fouls. He just always got them because he created the contact. And it felt like last night he wasn't necessarily seeking out people to create contact with. And what ended up happening was like pretty obvious examples of where it just felt like it's like the refs aren't going to call that because like you didn't initiate anything. Nobody really touched you in any. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was and then the sixth foul last night. I felt like some of his fouls too were kind of ticky-tack, but the sixth foul, the one that got him out, was particularly bad. That one was definitely a foul, and it was a situation where I was like, I'm surprised. Like, you shouldn't put yourself in that situation. Like, he clearly pushes over Poole, and like there was no real reason for him to do that.
They were doing a lot of I think it was a concerted effort by the team and the staff to put bodies on people, because every single play where guys were going in for rebounds, it seemed like Poole and Curry and Clay found themselves on the ground.
Yeah, well, even on defense too, from the jump, it felt like the Warriors turned the ball over like 2 or 3 times, like right at the start of the game. The Kings went on an 8-0 run. They set the tone like right away. And you're talking about the bodies, like on rebounds and everybody falling, like they were in the Warriors grill from the jump, like from the very tip. And that, I know that they've been playing pretty good defense throughout the series, but the intensity and physicality on the defensive end was very apparent from the very start. Like, you're talking about
happened for game 7.
They need identical game plan. I mean, You hold the Warriors to under 100 points, which I'd love to know how many times they've kept a team under 100 points this season. Because I guarantee you it ain't that many.
It's not more than 10.
But, I mean, you got to keep shooting. You have to keep shooting. That you like that. I know that they're gonna live and die by the three in a way. It's tough because game one they didn't hit the three very well. They still won. Game two, same thing. So they've got other ways to score, but you're gonna make the game so much easier for yourself if you hit those shots. So I don't like necessarily saying that they're going to live and die by the three, because they've got plenty of people who can create at the rim, but you got to keep shooting. The gang rebounding is a big one, because so many points for the Warriors come off of a rebound and then a quick kick out for a three, because everybody got a rebound, everybody crashed the board, and then you leave somebody wide open on the three-point line. Because you know either Clay or Steph or Wiggins, one of them is going to hang back. So that way you can kick out for a three. So you have to control the boards. Like, out-rebounding the Warriors by over 10 is absolutely a recipe to win that game. They turn the ball over a lot, so I'd like to see them cut down on the turnovers. But they forced 18 turnovers from the Warriors. Which was really good. Like, the Kings didn't shoot all that well. Like, they shot 40%. They shot 37% from the three-point line, so that was really good. But I think the thing for me is going to be the defensive intensity. That has to stay the same. The rebounding has to stay the exact same. And I think those two, for me, like, I don't want to just say the obvious ones, like, well, if they hit their shot, like, all of their shots, then, you know, obviously they're going to win. And if their three-points are falling, like, I think for me, if I had to pick the two biggest ones, it's going to be the defensive rebounds. Because offensive rebounds, I mean, yes, you definitely want those. But it's limiting those second chance points for me on the defensive end. That is that's the big one. So defensive rebounding and then keeping the defensive intensity. Like you force them to turn the ball over 18 times. Like if a team turns the ball over 18 times in a game, you should win that game 9 times out of 10.
I mean, the turnover number for the Warriors have been high all year.
Yeah.
Or all series.
Yeah. And I mean, same for the Kings, too. They both play a pretty frenetic pace. But yeah, defensive rebounding and the defensive intensity for me. Like that, those are the two big things that I think if they do that, they'll be fine. And then we'll be moving on to the second round, which is just. I can't even put that into words right now. And I don't want to put myself in that situation or any Kings fans in that situation. But all I'll say is I was at game one and I thought game one was crazy in that arena. I can't even imagine what game seven is going to sound like in that building.
Yeah, I can't. I really can't wait for tomorrow, even though I probably won't be able to watch it. I think big thing for me. So Mike Brown is probably one of those coaches that anybody would be most excited to play for. Every single time I hear him talk, it's like so-and-so's had a bad game. Herter's been in a slump. Trey's been in a slump. Keegan was in a slump, right? All I'm telling them is to shoot. When you're open, shoot.
Yep.
That's the biggest thing that he was preaching. After that last game, when he was specifically talking about Trey Lyles and his impact, he was like, yeah, me and my coaching staff, we've just been preaching to him, hey, when you're open, shoot it. You're a good shooter. And he put up 6 threes, made 2, right? But that impact of him stretching that floor and being active, I think that's the biggest change for Keegan, too. Him getting up, what was it, 15 shots?
17.
17 shots. Because we were sitting there in games 1 and 2 of like, I mean, he's only putting up 1 or 2 shots. Like, he's not even there. At least now he is putting in that conservative effort to be a part of the offense. And then the shot making will fall.
Yeah.
Later. And they are going to get the Warriors' best punch.
Oh, yeah.
On that game 7. I think I just hope it's close. I think the good thing is there's still improvement for the Kings to make. And so that's encouraging. Like that game 6 performance wasn't perfect and they can still improve on that. And really the Warriors are giving the Kings every opportunity to take advantage of these games with how sloppy they're being.
Yeah.
On the offensive side, I mean, they're like averaging close to 15 turnovers a game.
Mm-hmm.
In this series, it's pretty remarkable what they're. Yeah, and then the Kings are right there with them. Fox, that was a big talking point for him in the post game of. Yeah, we got to do a better job of limiting their points off of our turnovers, and we got to limit our turnovers. And he was talking about his turnovers specifically because he's. 6th in the NBA in turnovers per game, and him as a top 5 usage player in these playoffs can't happen. And it's just a bad recipe for the Kings. What percentage do you give the Kings of winning in game 7? Do you think they're the favorites?
I don't know. I haven't been saying. I've been so riding the I'm just happy to be here mentality for this entire time. And, you know, the Warriors win in game 5, I thought was really impressive from them to go into a hostile environment and to win, to send the game. I mean, to send the series back to your place. I thought that was really impressive.
Yeah.
And, My my feeling about Game 6 was more of my respect for the Warriors, because while I thought the Kings could go in there and win, to me, Game 6 was just a game that I didn't think the Warriors were capable of losing. And I think they gave the stat on the broadcast that the Warriors were 10-2 in series closeout games. So it was more of me just going, you know what, this game is just not something that they normally lose. Like, they just, even if they play bad, they'll find a way to win. Mm-hmm. But with the way that the Kings played, I mean, I'm going to go into this game fully believing that the Kings can 100% win this game.
Do you think the Warriors match, if the Kings were to, and I fully expect them to attempt a small ball lineup again, do you think the Warriors match it because they are the best small ball lineup playing team in NBA history?
So that would mean going Klay, Wiggins, Curry, Poole, Draymond. That's how yep. that would be the lineup that they would go with.
Yeah, or like Moody for Poole, but just not Kevon Looney out there. Draymond would be your center.
Maybe. Or I don't know. I mean, you know that the Warriors are going to make an adjustment to that lineup because it killed them in Game 6. Like, Mike Brown and his coaching staff absolutely went crazy with that, like, in a good way. So, I mean, you got to believe that they're going to make an adjustment to that. What's going to be interesting, I wonder if Draymond's going to get inserted back into the starting lineup, because Poole's not giving him anything right now. And, look, Jordan Poole's a really talented player. He's had a rough series just like Kevin Huerter has. But I'd even argue that Kevin Huerter at times has played better than Jordan Poole, for as bad as Huerter has played. Like, Poole's going through that same rough shooting, which is fine. Poole, like, that's all good. I'm not mad at you. I think they
should put in Gary Payton.
Maybe. Gary Payton's been really effective for them. That'd be terrible for the Kings to see. Because Gary Payton...
Having Payton and Wiggins out there, and potentially Draymond if you were to get out there, but that just allows them to switch so easily, especially on Fox, because all three of those guys have done points pretty good jobs on Fox.
What you do if you put that lineup out there is you limit kind of your offensive capabilities. If you're the Warriors,
a little bit. You're the two best shooters in NBA history. It doesn't matter.
No, I know, but I mean, just in terms of, like, if you're taking out Poole, then you have even Moody is a pretty decent offensive player. So yeah, it'll be interesting there. I mean, it's going to be a chess match, but you know, like, you know, to cap off the episode in your question earlier, I 100% believe the Kings can go in there and win this game. And I not only do I believe that because I think they're the better team, but they're, I mean, let's just face it. We've got an ultimate equalizer in the Sacramento Kings fans. Like, that arena is going to be, I thought game one was one of the most magical things I've ever experienced in my life. I wish I had the disposable income to go to Game 7 and experience it all over again, because I would be really interested to see if Game 7 is louder. And I almost expect it to be, truthfully. That place is going to be deafening. And you know what?
As it should.
And you know what? Like, the NBA, I think the NBA wants – I mean, like, the NBA
– No, they want Golden State Lakers. Come on.
No, I know. I was going to amend it. I think schedule makers and, like, TV partners, they want the Warriors Lakers. But I think but the rivalry, like, the Kings Lakers, that would be, oh man. I know we're biased.
That's not LeBron Steph. That's not.
I know it's not LeBron Steph. I get it. Like, and I think either way, you're going to get two really good storylines. Either you're going to get the team rivalry in the Kings Lakers, or you're going to get LeBron Steph. And I know for Kings fans, God, what an awesome thing it would be to have played the Warriors and beat the Warriors and then go on to play the Lakers. Man, that would be really, really, really cool.
Oh, my God. Okay, so I looked at – I was curious. I'll look at tickets for Game 7. Back row. First off, what do you
– Well, if I'm going off of my experience with Game 1, I got to say probably around $450.
So it's a little less. Right, okay. Now they're reselling at $360.
That's not too bad.
I were to go in 205, so it's like middle.
Yeah.
Up at the top. Very back. Because to the no one is behind you. $550.
Yeah, so like I said in one of the other episodes, I went around and just went to every single like duo seatings. Cause some people resell the tickets and just try to catch people who are really desperate. But there are people out there who are reasonable human beings and put these tickets out at reasonable prices. There's going to be, I guarantee you, there are seats closer than that that are way less expensive. They're just somewhere in the upper deck that you'd have to really take your time to search and find.
By way less expensive is like $100.
Well, yeah, because if you think about it from, like, you have to buy the second ticket, and then there's the whole tax fee and stuff, so it's probably, like, $200 cheaper. So, all right, what are your predictions for Game 7?
Oh, so, a couple things. Warriors are favored on the road. I'm betting. Their okay. favorite minus one.
They're the champs, so I mean,
yeah, but it's on the road, so that's kind of ESPN analytics. Matchup predictor has a 58% Sacramento Kings.
Gotcha.
It's nothing.
Yeah.
If they were to play at their, I think it would like games 1 and 4. And to me, the Kings really had the edge in those games. The Kings are going in. Both teams are going to be in the 120s. A step for close. Did Game 6 show up yesterday?
Game 6 play felt like he was sneaking up on everybody, but never erupted the way that Game 6 Clay has normally. He had 22 points. He's just been super, super consistent. I mean, we highlighted him last episode. I would say that I know that the obvious person who's been playing well is Steph, but Clay's been the silent killer.
Yeah. So, I think he'll have something like 25, probably 26, 28. I think it might give you close to 20. I mean, it's going to be a high-scoring game. To match those, Fox is going to have to match Steph. It's just, Monk has to match Clay, and then Sabonis needs Andrew Wiggins or close to it, and then you need of Trey Lyles, Harrison Barnes giving you something, Keegan Murray giving you something, Herter giving you something. The formula is there because I think a lot more players, they're, I think, a little deeper offensive than the Warriors are.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so to have Keegan Murray outscored Wiggins in this game. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, if you have that happen, I'm just saying if both teams play at their best.
Right.
That's like work.
Yeah.
Wiggins is going to give you close to 20, 18 or 20. That sort of thing. So, you're just asking for Herter, Keegan, TD, if he gets in, Davion, when he gets in, 2 shots and gets to that 10-point mark. And then that's the impact that they're going to have in winning against the Kings. And anything more, I think it's just gravy.
Yeah. Well, we have got basically 24 hours because at the time of filming this, it's about 10 a.m. and the game starts at noon tomorrow. So we've got basically 24 hours to get our minds right. I got to wash my clothes because I'm going to wear the same outfit that I wore yesterday. I'll tell you what, I showed up because I had an appointment at 4 o'clock. And I didn't realize that the game was starting at 5 until like 3 o'clock yesterday. I thought they were the late game because they've been the late game the entire time. So I go to the appointment. I come back and I turn on the game. And I turn it on literally as they're like throwing up the tip. And I was like, wow, that was perfect. So I sit there. I'm watching the game. The game is going well. I actually wore my King shirt to work. And then threw my work shirt on over the top of it because I refused to take off my King shirt. So I kept it on the entire time. And through the first half, that obviously they played really well. I sat in the same spot. I didn't really get up from that spot. I didn't go shower. I stayed in the same outfit everything until the end of the game. So we're running it back with the same outfit. Oh man, and we got to do everything we can as fans to send good vibes to the team for tomorrow.
Yeah, I gotta think about what I wore
yesterday.
Yeah, just no blue. King's long sleeve. Can't wear blue. Can't wear blue. I did have blue underwear on, but I just imagined I was sitting on Draymond's like face because he just sits on everybody. My God, he like. My mom pointed it out yesterday, too. She was like, does Draymond get to sit on everybody? Because he sat on Sabonis. He sat on Harrison. He laid on Keegan yesterday. Like, she's got a point. He does keep doing that.
He's getting his one-on-one time, man.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, for any of you who stuck around at the end of the episode, again, we really do appreciate it. If you're a Kings fan, then, from both of us – good luck tomorrow. be in a place surrounded by other Kings fans. Just don't disregard all of the other Warriors fans who you know. Don't worry about them. Forget it.
They're spend fake time. Anyway.
Yeah.
Spend their fandom started in 2015 anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Exactly. Spend time with Kings fans. Be in a place where you can jump, yell, and scream. And gosh, enjoy the game tomorrow. It's going to be a lot of fun. So
yeah, for whatever happens, I think going in with that, we have the ultimate expectation that we're going to play.
Yeah. Like to
see, in case there is a reality where they don't, just for my psyche. Man, that's going to be a tough day. I have to coach after the results of this game.
Yeah.
I might be a wreck. I might be yelling at some kids.
I know. It's either going to be two ends of the extreme. So.
All right. Coach Sam is in a really good mood.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right. Well, enjoy the games tomorrow, everybody. Or enjoy the game tomorrow, everybody. And wear purple. Wear purple.
Go all Kings.
Right. We will talk to you all later, probably after game 7, very soon after game 7. So whether or not that's the night of or the day after, we'll be back talking about whatever happens. So enjoy the game, and we'll see you all then. Light the beam.